Hello, and welcome to the American Humane Fireside Chat. My name is Monique, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. Please note, this call is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. This can be done by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad to register your question. If you require assistance at any point, please press star 0 and you'll be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to your host, Robin Ganzert, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Monique, and thank all of you for joining us for our 8th Fireside Chat. You know, just a few short weeks ago, we launched our Fireside Chats, and in order to share news about the state of the world's animals during the global pandemic, and to have an opportunity for us to discuss how we can work together to improve the world for our best friends, with American Humane's best friends. During 12 years in office, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt broadcast a total of 30 of his famous Fireside Chats to help rally the nation in a time of crisis. Today, I'll be sharing breaking news on our work to improve and save the lives of animals around the world, and I'm delighted that we will be welcoming a superstar of the animal health world to discuss what we all can do during the greatest crisis of our time. Dr. Thomas Edling is one of the nation's preeminent veterinarians and voices for animals. Not only has he worked with virtually every major pet organization in his positions as vice president and national director of veterinary medicine for Petco, but as one of the world's top experts in zoonotic diseases, he has worked together for many years with the CDC as an expert on some of the greatest health challenges facing the nation's animals. I like to think of him as the Dr. Fauci for animal health. Tom has been a remarkable contributor to American Humane in our community. He has served as chief veterinary advisor to our Hollywood program, lending his expertise to our scientific advisory committee, and he's also truly helped make air transportation safer for our best friends in working with that scientific group of experts. He's also been tremendous to help us inform our policies during the global pandemic. He's a true superstar and a champion of animals everywhere. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Tom Edling. Tom, how are you?
Oh, thank you. That was a pretty amazing introduction there.
Thank you, Robin. I'm doing fine.
Good. We have this all recorded, so you can replay that introduction anytime you want to.
You know what? When my kids start giving me trouble, I'll play it for them. Yeah.
That's right. Say, hey, this is what Robin just said about me. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, Tom, it's really true. You really are an amazing superstar and really one of the most authoritative voices on the condition of our nation's animals, and I dare say the world's animals. To have you at American Humane at this precipitous time has been just tremendous. So thank you for what you've done in advising us and in really being a contributor to how we move forward with our mission of people, animals, and the world we share. You know, for months, American Humane's been at the forefront of debunking many of those dangerous and irresponsible myths and rumors that have been floating out there. So, Tom, I've got a couple of questions for you to share your thoughts and your expertise with our listeners, members of our humane
Great.
Community. And I'd love to just get your thoughts, because this is changing every day. I know every day I wake up, I read another article. I'm sending you articles at 4 in the morning. Thank you for being so responsive and telling me to calm down. You're so good at that. I'm so grateful. So my first question, Tom, is such an important one for so many pet owners and those of us who love our companion animals. And this is the one I hear. I see this in the media, and I see it so misinterpreted. So the question is simply this: can our pets get the COVID-19 virus, and can they give it to us and our families?
You know, that's the best question out there right now, isn't it? And there's so much confusion and misinformation. I do love it when you send me the articles that you find, because I read them and just start shaking my head. And there's so many people trying to capture headlines and not really thinking about what's truly going on in the world. You know, when you look at today's numbers, around 4.4 million cases worldwide, 1.4 million cases in the United States, And out of all those cases, there's only a handful of reported cases of animals with COVID-19. And in the United States, there's actually, everybody knows about the tigers and lions at the zoo in New York. And other than those, there's only two cats from New York that are actually been confirmed by the USDA and the CDC of having it. So all this misinformation going around, a tiny number of animals throughout the world have been tested and found to have the virus in their system. Some of them have become ill, slightly ill, but most of them don't show any signs of the disease. So what we know is that it certainly appears that the virus that causes COVID-19, which is actually called SARS-CoV-2, so SARS-CoV-2 is the virus and COVID-19 is the disease. Some animals have become infected with the virus, but this is only after very close contact with people and in some laboratory settings.
Right.
So out in nature, when we're walking around with our animals, if we get sick from it and we're really sick and we're at home, you know, closed in like we should be and we're cuddling with our animals, that's how these animals are getting this disease. You know, the tigers in the zoo got it from a handler. You know, he didn't know he was sick, but unfortunately, right before you feel the symptoms that you're sick, that's when you're spreading the virus the most. That's why you can get asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic spread of the disease. So people who have the virus but aren't feeling bad yet, right, the few days right before they get sick and feel bad, that's when they're spreading the most virus. And that's what happened. They're speculating the case with the tigers and lions at the zoo. And thankfully, they're all doing fine. The animals that get this thing that either – They either seem to not really care too much about it, or they get well very quickly.
Wow!
That's been
a big concern for me, Tom, when I'm out walking my dogs. You know, I will try to walk them, you know, 3 to 4 times a day because I'm at home now and I can do that. It's a luxury. But then I worry: are they going to catch the, you know, COVID-19 virus, and are they going to bring it in? And you're basically saying that's not really happening.
No, it's not happening. And I was just literally right before we got on this call, I was reviewing some information that's going to get, I worked closely with the CDC, as you said, and we were just reviewing some information that's going to go out on the CDC website soon. And there is currently no evidence that animals can transmit the virus to people. Now, you know, that may change.
Wow.
That's, you know, we don't know, but you look at all the cases and there have been no cases so far. So that's a pretty good indication that the risk is really small if there's any risk at all. This virus spreads from people to people. It certainly did. It probably came from a bat. That's what we think, because this type of COVID or this type of coronavirus is found in bats, and we found through other diseases that it comes from bats. Who knows how it actually got to us, but it was through, you know, interactions between bats and people that shouldn't have happened. And so the virus spreads people to people, and it's typically from respiratory droplets. That means coughing, sneezing, or talking, being in a confined area. So it's one of those things that when you're out walking with your dog, if you maintain your 6-foot social distance with you and your dog, then you'll be fine. Out in the open air, it's actually pretty difficult to catch the virus. It's in confined spaces, businesses, restaurants, places like that, where there's a lot of people, a lot of virus. Every time you breathe, a little bit of it goes out if you're infected, of course. If you sneeze or cough, a lot goes out. And then it kind of fills up a room because these viral particles are so tiny, they can float around in the air. And if you're in a room long enough, you'll breathe enough in and you'll get it. But simply walking past people as they're out jogging or walking or whatever, as long as you're keeping your 6 feet, you really have a very, very low probability of catching this disease under those circumstances. The vast majority.
If I'm wearing a mask walking with my dogs too, and I'll be fine outside.
Yeah, and the mask. You know, the mask. There's a lot of types of masks, and one is a true respirator, which is an N95. You've probably heard that term floating around.
Yeah.
And when that's fitted properly, so if you wear it properly, that will keep you from getting infected through respiratory. Now, if you touch your eyes or your nose or your mouth, then your mask isn't helping.
Mm-hmm.
But that will protect you. Most people are wearing masks that are not N95 respirator type masks. And what's that doing? That's actually protecting other people from us. So when we talk or sneeze or cough, that captures most of those viral particles in that mask, and so they don't go out into the environment. That's what a mask is really doing. It's not stopping it from getting to you unless you're wearing a respirator, but it's stopping it from going into the environment. I think that's an important point.
Well, Tom, we need to get you on all these news channels to spread this word instead of those folks writing those irresponsible articles, because you have such an incredibly important and valuable perspective rooted in science based on your years of experience with working alongside the CDC and developing, you know, our policies in terms of our relationship with animals, too. And so I appreciate those true facts so that we all can come through this crisis safely together. And something I wanted to ask you about, too, is these horrible articles that come out that imply or even just state falsely that we're going to get COVID from our dogs can lead to so many pets being abandoned during this crisis. And we've been encouraging Americans to foster or adopt a pandemic pet from a shelter or rescue group, which has been wonderful. But can you talk to us a little bit about your thoughts about some media that's reporting that a number of shelters have been emptied and there's like a premature sense of victory? Hey, the shelters are all empty. You and I, we know that's not true. Maybe in some urban areas hardest hit by COVID, those shelters might be clear. But in fact, most shelters have tons of animals. Am I right?
Yeah, no, you're right, right. I'm going to make one more point about the pets before I move on to the shelters. This is another question I get a lot. Can you get the virus from petting your dog or your cat or whatever? I hear that a lot. And the good news is, no, you're not going to. The thing about viruses, they're so tiny. These things are so small, and you have to use you can't even see them with a regular microscope. You have to use an electron microscope. They're so small. But the hair or the fur of an animal is so porous that the virus actually gets inside the hair particles or the hair follicles and the hair itself. And it's so tiny that it's captured in there. And so when you pet the dog or the cat, even if it's been coughed on by somebody, there's absolutely no reason to believe that the petting your dog is going to get the virus. So I wanted to get that out there too, because that's a lot of people think, oh no, if someone touches my dog and then I touch the dog, are they going to get it? Answer is, well, there's absolutely no reason to believe that's going to happen. So
let's just summarize this, because you're bringing up some really great points. Let's just summarize for everyone on our call today. Tell me the top couple of points about COVID and our pets, transmission and all. Tell me the real deal.
So the real deal is there's no indication so far that pets are spreading it to people. This is a person-to-person virus. It started zoonotic. It came from animals at some point because of people doing bad things. And now it's in the human population. This is not an animal virus. This is now a human virus. Animals are not giving it to people. People are giving it to a very small number of animals. And so if you have it, you need to protect your animals. Don't cuddle them. Don't snuggle them. Don't sleep with them. All these things that we like to do with our animals. Have someone else take care of your animal if you have COVID. Treat them like you would anybody else. These are our family members. It is our responsibility, and I take this very seriously, especially as a veterinarian. It's our responsibility as humans to take care of the animals that we've brought into our lives. And, you know, we need to care for and protect our animals from ourselves. They're not the danger here. We are. So you're not going to get it from your animal, from petting it, from anything else. It's just your animal is treated as a small child that needs to be protected. That's what they are. This is a human thing, not an animal thing. And so you don't need to be scared of your animals. If you get the disease, treat it like you would any other family member and isolate it from you, have someone else take care of it. So I think those are the important things. Protect our animals. Don't be scared of them.
Tom, I've always shared during this time, too, what pet spread is unconditional love. Simple as
absolutely.
That. They're not spreading COVID.
Yeah,
they spread love. And don't we need a heck of a lot more love right now? Am I right?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I get up every morning. My dog, Luke, he was found wandering the streets. We've had him about 5 or 6 years. And, you know, all he does is look at me, and my day's going to be start off good, you know. no matter what thoughts I've had over the night, you know, or what's going on, you wake up, and we all know that. We all know that feeling.
Moving on
to shelters.
Give Luke a hug.
So
talk to me about shelters,
yeah.
Because that's what I'm hearing, too, and it breaks my heart when people are saying, oh, I can't get another pet. The shelters are all empty, and that's just wrong? Tell us what your thoughts about that.
So, you know, the shelter organizations, we started, and I'm not real involved. I've been monitoring, and I'm in on the calls and talking to people about it, but I'm not a shelter vet person. There are some fabulous people out there that are doing amazing work in the shelters, you know, veterinarians and all the shelter workers, you know, the hard workers that they get paid almost nothing, but they're working with their heart, you know. They've been doing an outstanding job during this crisis. And they, most of them, the reason I think you're seeing a lot of these shelters don't have animals in them, they've been using fostering programs. So they're having families foster the animals to get them out of the shelters, because at the very beginning we thought, oh, there's going to be a lot of abandonment. And that, luckily, that hasn't been as much as we were scared it would be. It hasn't been that much, because I think we got the word out early. Thanks to you and American Humane and all the good stuff you've been doing, and other organizations that say, don't be scared of your pets. You know, don't relinquish them. Don't be scared of them. You know, like we saw in other countries, the horrid things that were happening. So they've done a lot of fostering programs, and that really emptied a lot of space out of many shelters. And so the shelters have, because they wanted to make sure that if animals were brought in, they have special provisions. So if a person has COVID and they can't take care of the animal, then the shelters can take it, and they're set up to, so they can put it in an isolation area, you know, just to make sure, keep it safe. And so that's the reason a lot of shelters have been numbers haven't been as high. And a lot of people, because they knew they're going to be home for the next 6 or 8 weeks, they adopted animals. So there was a large adoption, but mostly it's been fostering. So as the economy and as the world starts turning back to normal and we start returning to work, many of those fosters, you know, people fostering the animals, they're no longer going to be able to do that because they're going back to work. And so they're expecting an influx of animals back into the shelters. This is also a time where we have, you know, so many people, you know, the economic damages that are being caused by COVID are significant too. You know, we certainly have a horrible loss of life and illness, but the economics are horrible too for many people. And many people are going to have to, you know, no fault of their own, because they can't work, they're going to have to relinquish the animals. So shelters are starting to look at and see people bringing their animals in, because they just flat can't keep them anymore because they don't have any money. It's also the springtime. And that's kind of a double whammy. You know, springtime, when I've worked with shelters, there's a lot of fundraising events, things like that that go on in the spring, adoption events. You know, everybody is coming out from the winter doom and gloom and, oh, let's get a dog. Mm-hmm. And they go to the shelters. They give money. Those aren't happening. So those shelter events of adoption and fundraising aren't happening. And so that's really going to be hard on the shelters, because their funding is down quite a bit. So what some of the shelters have done, I think, is really, really nice, is they're putting together these emergency kits for economically challenged people. And a kit is like food, treats, and some of the others, of the organizations that have their own veterinary care, they're offering that vet care at really reduced prices for people that are economically challenged. So there's a lot going on, but I think you're going to see things get worse in the shelter community, because they're going to be overwhelmed here soon. Just because people returning to work bring those animals back. So they're looking at this a lot like back in 2008 during the economic downfall, the recession. They're kind of
maybe even worse than that.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And they're gearing
the
up
unemployment
for
now is unbelievable.
Yeah. No,
well, Tom, you know, you've been so important part of our efforts at American Humane with our national campaign Feed the Hungry, which we've designed to help so many animals in shelters that are struggling during these extraordinarily challenging times. I have an update for you and for all of our listeners, and that is that our incredible program, and this is amazing, we have made life-saving grants now, Tom, to shelters and rescues in 24 states already, helping ensure that the critical food, medicines, and supplies to keep animals alive are getting to where it's needed most. In fact, I've got a note I want to read you from one of our grantees we gave to the Pet Pantry of Lancaster County in Pennsylvania, which operates a pet food bank, spay, neuter, and vaccine program. Love this group, and I love what they're doing. Dr. Brian Langlois wrote to me after receiving this grant, Tom, and this is what he said. He said, times have not been so good, have not been good so far in 2020 for many pet owners and humane organizations. The need for such simple things as pet food can be hard to come by when financial strife hits. We want to express a sincere thank you to American Humane and their Feed the Hungry grant program. Through your generous contributions to us, we were able to keep our pantry shelves stocked, as well as have enough food to provide for 3 months to those clients that we have on our monthly food handout program. 3 months! It brings tears to my eyes. These people have pets that would otherwise not be able to keep for the simple fact they're not able to afford to feed them. The grant money received from American Humane helps keep our own shelter animals happy with full bellies as well. From all of us in Lancaster County at Pet Pantry and the thousands of animals we serve, thank you. So, thank you, Dr. Langlois, and thank you for all of our donors who really are helping us, which is amazing, and their families when they need it most. And I'm so grateful to Lulu's Fund for also making a significant contribution. Lulu's Fund has stepped up and made a really sizable grant to help us with the Feed the Hungry, and I know we're going to have more announcements in the weeks ahead about the hundreds of thousands of meals to dogs, cats, horses, sheep, and even some remarkable endangered animals living in conservation centers. So a special thank you to our incredible donors who've been so generous. I thank you, Tom, and our rescue team, Toon, for going through the grant applications and getting this money deployed every single week. Every single day, we're issuing more grant money to local shelters like the Pet Pantry, and gosh, it's making such a difference. So thank you. Isn't that
That's
good?
Fantastic.
Tom, doesn't that make you feel good?
Oh, it does. Yeah.
Our fireside chats are meant to have really good news, but I want to share that with you. But, Tom, I want to flip on something here quickly because you are one of the world's foremost experts on something, and I want to talk about something that we've mentioned on this fireside chat a few weeks ago. And you and I did a joint op-ed on this, which I think was picked up in tremendous national dialogue. You know, we've just finished our 105th year of Be Kind to Animals Week, and the global crisis we all face is really a direct result, what we talk about in our op-ed, the inhumane treatment of animals and the sale of exotic animals for food in one of the world's now infamous wet markets. Tom, Dr. Evan, can you tell us your perspective on these wet markets and their impact?
Yeah, these things just give me nightmares, seriously. I've seen way too many things that have happened in these areas, and I seriously wake up sometimes just in a cold sweat because of what I've seen these animals are going through. I think one of the things we can start off with is a kind of a differentiation. We're finding out more and more. We kind of have a term of wet market for the entire market that is like happening in Hunan and some other areas. And we can differentiate between the wet market, which is mostly just an open market like you might see in European countries and some areas in the United States, and then the wildlife portion of that market. So I'm gonna zero in on the really bad part, because the other part is that these nice cultural markets where they're selling vegetables and fruits and things like that. And then there's the wildlife market, and that's where the horror is. You know, they sell wild animals, and you know the list I saw recently, the one like in Hunan, they literally are selling badgers and wolf pups and snakes and bamboo rats and porcupines, anything that they can catch and bring. You know, they put them in these tiny cages, cramped, dirty conditions, and then somebody goes out and says, I want that one, and they pick it up. So these animals have been usually without food and water for a long time, scared to death because these are wild animals, put in these tiny cages, mistreated, and then they're pulled out and literally slaughtered before your eyes. You hit them in the head and start skinning them. It's just, you know, it's unthinkable. So what happens here, and what they think, you know, this is speculation, but we do know that this is a cause of disease. When they do that, they literally are slaughtering animals on these tables with people standing around. Most of us today, I mean, I've seen some of this stuff, so I know what's going on, and I've been to slaughter plants and places, and you know, this is really, really bloody and messy and gory. It's just no other way to put it. and the fluids and all these things that are in these animals get sprayed everywhere when they cut them open. And, you know, I'm sorry, and this is such a graphic, gory topic, but
we need to hear it, Tom. We need to know what's real. We can't imagine it. We need to know this. I'm so glad you're being just honest about it.
It's really terrible. And so all these bodily fluids, which carry these diseases or these bacteria or viruses, they are spread. So people standing close to it, this stuff gets splattered on them, very literally. And we think that's probably one of the ways that, you know, the current COVID outbreak that we were having, it could have been spread, could have started. It went from, they slaughtered a bat and it went to some other animal to a person. You know, we don't know that for certain, but it's a really good thing that's how we speculate it's happened. We do know it's happened in other times. We do know that, like the MERS, back in 2002, 2003, that came through civet cats. We do know that happened. That went from bats to humans and to the civet cats. We know that. Some of these other markets, there's just one that just opened up recently in southern China, more of a rural area, and they're offering bats, lizards, scorpion, and even cats and dogs. I mean, this is, you know, our culture, we don't eat cats and dogs, obviously, but some other cultures do, and these are, you know, anyway, this is stuff that needs to, it just needs to stop. There's no, absolutely no reason for it. To, you know, people do not need to eat these animals. It's just one of the things.
Period.
That, period, yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely.
And it causes spread disease.
You know, you and I, and we have expressed this strongly over and over. You know, I've been in a lot of media over the past month, and to whoever listens to us, what is happening in these wet markets is truly a blatant violation of the social contract we have with animals. And
absolutely,
we must insist as a community, as a country, as global leaders, we must insist that the kind of humane protection, scientific standards, and verily sound practices that we are promoting in this country be exported and adopted by all countries around the world. And I know you and I both believe this vehemently. Until we fix the grievously broken social contract with other species who share our world, and until we fix the many destructive violations humankind has allowed to occur to that unspoken moral obligation in our relationship with animals and the earth itself, we can expect more and more crises like this. It's not only a matter of ethics, but it's really a matter of survival. And I think that what I'm excited about is what American Humane, you and I are working on this closely together to address this matter in a major new international platform, which I know, and you know too, is going to be a game changer in the humane field. And I'm just so grateful, Tom, for your leadership. And I hope you will stay around with us because we're going to have a lot of Q&A for you in a minute after I finish a few more AH updates. Will you stay with us?
I can, yeah. My slate is
great,
open.
Great. Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. And thank you again for being our partner as we continue to fight these gross abuses. And friends, stay tuned. We're going to get a few American Humane updates, some victories that we have experienced for the animals for which we have the pleasure and love of serving. Here is an update for you on our conservation program. As many of you know on this call, American Humane is the largest certifier of animal welfare in the entire world. And I'm so very pleased to welcome a new member to our growing worldwide family of humane institutions. The Denver Zoo, which is one of the best zoos on the planet, has just earned our American Humane Certified Seal for outstanding welfare and treatment they provide to the nearly 3,000 creatures in their care. The Denver Zoo sits on 80 acres of land and is home to such marvelous, incredible creatures such as African lions and more tigers, Asian elephants, and those incredible orangutans, which are so critically endangered. And one of my favorite of all their wonderful animals is their new baby Indian rhinoceros that they just welcomed to the world. There's only, Tom, and I know you know this horrible number, too, and for me it's just stunning, there's only 3,500 of these one-horned rhinos left living in the wild, which just goes to show how incredibly important this program at Denver Zoo and other zoological centers around the world are so needed to help preserve the legacy of life on the earth for our kiddos and grandkids to enjoy seeing these incredible creatures. So thank you, Denver Zoo, for joining our family and for being a leader in the humane movement. And friends, if you want to learn more about our humane certified zoos and aquariums, visit humaneconservation.org. Oh, and Tom, I've got a Hero Dog Award update for you and for everyone. Tom, that you're so good about helping keep animals safe in our Hollywood program. And we always love talking about our American Humane Hero Dog Awards and some of the amazing stories that we've learned about dogs who are improving and really saving our lives. This year, we have 408 heroic hounds in the running. This is amazing, and this I'm going to share with you the story of Sobe, as told by the person whose life Sobe saved. And this is, I'm going to read you her letter. I nominated my service dog, Sobe. Sobe is a four-year-old rescue who was 2 days away from being euthanized in a kill shelter in Georgia. I am a combat veteran who struggles with PTS and a recovering addict. I began self-medicating after returning home from 2 deployments. I had no place to go except digging my own grave. And with the one last effort to have a good life, I got on a bus and I traveled to where I grew up. I ran into an old friend who had a service dog, and I asked him if it helped him. He said it saved his life, and he put me in touch with canines on the front line and said, "This is where my life changed." They gave me Sobe, and we had an instant bond. I began getting outside, going for walks, opening my curtains. I was beginning to see the world again because of a dog. When I'm having a panic attack, Sobe is trained to bring me back to the present moment and reality. If we are out in public, Sobe is trained to watch my back. Because of Sobe, I was able to start a chapter of canines on the front line, paying it forward. Sobe is a true hero dog. Without Sobe, I'd be dead and buried. Wow. Tom, I know you read these stories too, and each time I read one of them, I get goosebumps and shivers and tears and all of it. I just get to be just a mess when I read these. But I just have to do a big shout out today to Sobe. Sobe, thank you for being a hero when you were needed most, and thank you for your incredible partner, your owner, who's just took time to nominate you and share stories. And friends, I want everyone to go to herodogawards.org. It's going to give you an opportunity to read these stories, which will warm your heart. Maybe you'll even share a tear like I do when I read them. And you can vote. Vote for your favorite hero dog. They'll be unveiled at the 10th Annual Hero Dog Awards presented by Lois Pope Life Foundation. Hello, Lois. We love our friend Lois. And broadcast nationwide on Hallmark Channel this fall. We'll be in this partnership 10 years, Tom, with Hallmark and with Lois Pope Life Foundation. Both are truly humane heroes. These are leaders who have just brought together so many animals and people and really shared our values of building a more humane world. I love Lois. I love the Life Foundation board members, and I love the Hallmark Channel family. They've allowed us to share these stories now for 10 years. Can you believe it? Amazing, right?
Hopefully we'll be able to be live again, too.
Yes, yes. I know. We all hope for that. And, Tom, I know you and I both have such an amazing appreciation and truly respect for our military programs. And I've got another story to share with both you and our incredible listeners. You know, for more than 100 years, American Humane's been supporting our men and women in the armed services. And we've supported the military and service animals on whom they depend. One of our programs is Pups for Patriots, where we find dogs in need of forever-loving homes and train them to become free, specialized service dogs for veterans coping with PTS and TBI. These dogs really improve and save lives for warriors coping with what we know are the invisible wounds of war. And friends, I know these veterans, I know so many of them, and these invisible wounds of war are incredibly amplified by the extraordinary stress and isolation caused by the pandemic. Let me read you a story that Amber wrote me telling me about her service dog, Sophie. And I love this, and I can't wait to give Sophie a big hug when I can see her in person. Amber writes this, a graduate of our Pups for Patriots program. I would like to thank you for the gift of providing me, allowing me to go through your Professor Beatrice program. Sophie is quite spirited, and the patience from the trainers was amazing. In the end, along with my working with her, we succeeded. It was so helpful to be able to be an active participant in the training process. Sophie and I are a great team now. Sophie is now able to retrieve most anything for me, including my medicine bag, my dropped keys, my shoes. She'll even pick up her leash and give it to me if I drop it. As a result of going through the program, Sophie has tuned into me so well that she's able to alert me in advance of me having a panic attack. On cue, she's going to create a great space around me by standing in front or in back of me as needed. Having Sophie in my life has given me the motivation to get out of bed in the morning and be able to actually participate in daily life. And because I'm now able to take Sophie with me in public places like the grocery store, I feel more comfortable and I'm able to be in situations that I normally would not be able to tolerate. For example, I'd often abandon my grocery cart in the middle of the store without checking out because of my anxiety and my PTSD. Now I'm able to complete more trips with Sophie having my back. Again, I want to say thank you so much for helping us complete this journey. It has made such a great impact in the quality of my life. Wow, Amber, I can't wait to meet you in person once we get through the COVID pandemic. I can't wait to shake your hand to thank you for your service to our great country. And a big hug to Sophie, one of our incredible service dogs. Thank you, Sophie, for providing all your love to one of our brave veterans. And we all need, America needs you both, and we're grateful beyond words. I love that program, Tom, and I know you do too, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. That's an amazing program.
I know. Well, Tom, you and I are so fortunate to work with this incredible board of directors at American Humane, led by our amazing, inspirational board chair, John Payne. John has been so instrumental in providing us with executive leadership in these challenging pandemic times. I want to give a big shout to all of our board members for their leadership, and especially to our board chair, John Payne. And, Tom, I know you know John extraordinarily well. You've worked together over the years, and I know you join me in thanking John and the board for their leadership.
Absolutely. You have an incredible board and leadership, and it's not just amazing what they do, but it's fun to work with them. They're good people.
They are
fun to work with.
They are fun.
They do a great job.
They're fun.
Yeah.
They do, and they also love animals as much as you and I do. So it's allowed us to stay so mission-focused. I mean, you and I, Tom, have been producing all of these white papers, op-eds on, you know, what's going on in the pandemic and really sharing our points of view. And, of course, we do have this incredible game changer that we're unveiling any moment now regarding our new deal, taking off the fireside chat concept that FDR created so many years ago. We're going to create our new deal for people, animals, and the world we share, learning, taking hard lessons learned from the pandemic and hopefully challenging the world leaders to step up and do the right thing by our animal friends. And I'm so grateful, Tom, to have you as my partner in all of this. I want to thank you for visiting with us and sharing your expertise in these challenging times. And the key takeaway for me today is that no matter how isolated we feel as we negotiate this modern disaster, we can still continue to work together effectively and make such a difference for the millions of animals and people, too. Friends, all of you on the phone are our champions, our hometown heroes of compassion. I'm so grateful for what you do in allowing us to do our work and joining forces with us. Continue to help spread the word about the work we're doing. Our campaigns, our newsletters, our annual impact report are all on our website. They can help us together to recruit new humane warriors for our cause, which is now more vital than ever before. I thank you all for what you're doing, what you've done, what you continue to do every day for the cause of animals. And friends, I would like to now welcome you to ask us questions, especially while we have the esteemed Dr. Edeline online with us about animal issues and concerns. So I will turn it over to our operator to ask for questions from our wonderful audience.
Sure. And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question or make a contribution on today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure your line remains unmuted locally. I will then speak to you individually, take your name, and introduce you into the call. Again, if you'd like to ask a question for today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now.
Great. And Tom, while we wait for people to think about their questions, again, I want to thank you for what you've done, just truly not only for providing such incredible thought leadership for American Humane, but really providing that voice for animals daily with this, your work with the CDC, which I know has been just so terrifically needed and so important. So thank you for what you're doing and your contributions.
Well, you're welcome. You're a great group to work with. You really are. They very, very much care about what they're doing, and they work so hard. They really do. They're good people.
I know. We all want to thank the many heroes, the frontline responders, our healthcare workers who are saving lives every day, human lives every day, those that are working in the various government agencies from local and state and county departments of health to the national and federal level, too. It looks like, Tom, I think that we have one email question for Tom, and this has come through email, and I'm going to read this for you. I love this question. It's very, very good. Are some animals, Tom, more susceptible for COVID-19 than others? That's a great, great question.
Yeah, that is a great question. And the answer is we think yes. So without getting too technical, there are receptors in your respiratory system that allow COVID to infect you. People have them. Great apes have them. We're very concerned about great apes because we're talking about animals from Africa and Asia. We're DNA-wise, we're very closely related, and they have the same receptors, and so we're pretty sure they'll get them. As far as our domestic animals, we found out that cats, ferrets, and oddly enough, Syrian hamsters have the same receptors. Now, they're not identical, but that's why we've seen a few cat cases around the world. We haven't seen any ferret cases yet, but we have seen cases of mink farms, which kind of make me shudder, but mink farms in Denmark have had major impacts in several mink farms. So we know the animals that are related, the Muscidae family, they're infected. They can be infected. So we know that those animals so far are the ones that have the receptors. Now, they're not getting it like people are, but they are more susceptible. That's why we've seen more of the cats, the tigers and the lions. Luckily, we haven't seen them in the non-human primates just because, exposure. There are not that many around to be exposed, and we're really terrified that it's going to get into the wild populations that could be devastating. Yes, that's a great question. And so, yes, so as far as we know, that cats, the ferrets, animals related to mink and ferrets, and Syrian hamsters are the ones that we know so far are more susceptible than others. Great question.
Wow. Wow. Thank you. And, Tom, just to repeat the message at the very beginning that you said, we will not be catching COVID from our cat or dog. Is that correct?
As far as we know, that's straight from the CDC. There's no reason to believe that we will.
But they can catch it from us if we're isolating with them and we have COVID-19. So let them be separated in their own quarantine, am I right?
That's
so
right.
So we don't
that's
pass
right.
it on
yeah.
to them.
Yeah.
Because I love your analogy. They're like our small children in our household.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They are our kids.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. So if I don't know if we have another question, but I have a question I get pretty frequently that I would like to address if that's okay.
Please. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So recently, one of the big veterinary laboratories has come out with a test for animals for COVID-19, for SARS-CoV-2. And it's one of those things that although testing is available for animals and they've been used, they did a lot of testing on samples that were sent in for any reason, respiratory samples that were sent in. So they have thousands and thousands of samples they've tested. And so it's available. And the question I get is, should I get my pet tested if I think it might have SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19? Mm-hmm. And the answer is pretty much no. Now, if there's a very good, very strict protocol. First off, and this is working through the state public health veterinarians and the CDC and the USDA. So this is a very serious thing to try to just go and test an animal. The test isn't hard; it's just a swab. But if it takes resources away from humans that are having problems, and there's so few animals having it, and so few animals getting sick, and no animals dying so far, it's one of those things that if you want to test it, the state public health group in your state will send a veterinarian out to your location, and they will find out if the animals first was exposed. So were they in a home with a COVID person? Then they'll make the determination, well, do we really need to do the test? Is it going to give us any information that we really need? And they'll make that determination. Then if they do that, then they will talk to the CDC, and the CDC will more or less give their okay to do it. And then it'll go through a process of going through a laboratory, and then the lab, if it goes through a lab that's not the CDC, or it's a lab that's the National Veterinary Lab for the United States, and it's in Iowa, they'll send it to that lab and get a verification. And so you go through all these different steps. And so it's not as simple as, hey, have your vets test. It doesn't work that way. It's a very serious process because they really want to make sure that the resources are being used where they need to be. And we don't want to also just alarm people that an animal has it. There was a case not too long ago where some people kind of went off on their own and did a test on a dog, and it made the news. Well, that hasn't been verified. The state public health people and the CDC weren't real thrilled with that because these people didn't follow the protocol. So it's one of those things that it is important to understand how to do this and why it's done. That's a question I get a lot. So I just wanted to say there's a process that can be done if it needs to be. And it's, run by very, very good people who know what they're doing. But it's not just, let's go test the dog and see what's happened. We don't do that.
That's really good to know. That's an incredibly valuable point, too, as we're all talking about testing all the time, too. Wow. Well, friends, we've had such an incredible time today with Dr. Tom Edling, and we're just so grateful that he is with American Humane and one of our many colleagues and thought leaders, all who are devoted to building a better world for animals. And Tom, again, my gratitude to you for being a colleague with me at American Humane, and certainly such great appreciation and respect for all you have done in your esteemed career and what you continue to do today in this incredibly challenging time with the pandemic. Thank you, Tom, for what you do.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you for having me on. I really enjoy working with American Humane. Again, great people that are fun to work with.
I love that. Thank you.
And do fabulous work, too. It's just, it's so rewarding to work with people that do great work. Not that many places do outstanding work, and everything American Humane does is really worth it. And it's really rewarding to work with American Humane. So thank you for allowing me to be with you.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. I wanted to, as we wrap up today, I wanted to remind our friends on the call, again, thank you for what you do. Please do use our resources that we have, our campaigns, our newsletters, our impact report. We have lots of news articles and opinion editorial pieces that we've shared over the past few weeks. In particular, we're happy to share more of those with you. If you need any, don't hesitate to reach me. I wanted to give a special shout-out, too, to our previous guest and our fireside chats. Danielle Fischel joined us a few weeks ago. Carson Kressler, Barbara Niven, and Allie Sweeney, all incredible champions of compassion, and we're grateful that they also serve as American Humane ambassadors. So thank you, Danielle, Carson, Barbara, and Allie. And again, Tom, thank you for you. On behalf of all of us at American Humane, I look forward to joining you in just 2 short weeks at our next Fireside Chat. It'll be Fireside Chat number 9. We're going to have an incredible guest speaker as well on a very important topic. Tom hinted at it, what is happening with COVID and the wild populations of animals. And so we'll have a perspective on conservation in these challenging times in 2 short weeks in our next Fireside Chat. In the meantime, please stay safe, please stay well, and as I end every Fireside Chat, God bless America and God bless American Humane. Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect. Hosts, please stay on the line and await further instruction.